really going to introduce Harden. He'll introduce himself with his sikha, with his speech. He'll describe some of the wonderful things he's involved in. So I just want to thank him for making time in his very busy schedule to come back once again to Shabbat with women to inspire and to share some ideas, which hopefully you'll be able, you will be able to take much from for next year and thereafter. So once again, thank you very much, Hart, for finding time for us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Rabbi Hart.
Hart, great. Okay, hey everyone. Hi. So, my name is Hart Levine, from New York. Grew up down in the village, went to Ramaz. Any Ramaz people here? Okay. Then I went to Yeshiva Kotel for a year, and then I went to Penn for college. Before I talk about my story, can we just quickly go around? It's a lot of you. Okay, can we take a poll about plans for next year? How many people are going to Stern? How many people are going to Touro? Okay. One. How many people are going to Queens College? How many people are going to somewhere in the UK? Where are you going?
Middlesex University.
Middlesex, okay.
UCL.
UCL, okay. Okay, and everyone who didn't raise their hands, where are you going?
Rutgers.
Rutgers, okay.
Ryerson in Toronto.
Toronto.
San
Juan Catholic. SMC, okay.
Barry
Lanham,
who's
Rio? Great. Yeah. Where?
NYU.
NYU, cool.
Barnard,
okay.
Ryerson.
Ryerson also, okay. Is that everyone? Did we cover everyone? Shana Bet. Okay, so people saying Shana Bet, what are you doing after Shana Bet? Not sure, Stern.
Barnard.
Okay. Great, okay, so I'm gonna start, I wanna tell a little bit about my experiences in college and then what I do now and how that can be hopefully relevant to all of you, wherever you're going. So I'm gonna start with this story. The first day of my junior year in college, I was sitting in the kosher dining hall inside the Hillel. Does everyone know what a Hillel is? It's like the building where all the Jews hang out. Sitting with my friends. It's the first day of school, catching up in the summer, excited for the new year, having dinner, and I see this girl walk in. I'd never seen her before, she didn't look familiar. She walked in, sort of looked around, and turned around to leave. So I'm watching the scene unfold. I'm like, you know what, I should go over and say hello. So I got up, I left my friends. Meanwhile, she had turned around and started walking out. So I run after her, I'm like, hey, excuse me, do you need some help? You looking for something? She's like, actually, yeah. I said, hi, my name's Hart, I'm a junior. She said, I'm Erica, I'm a sophomore. I said, so what brings you to Hillel? She says, well, actually, I just found out that I'm Jewish, so I came here to find out more. I'm like, what? That's crazy. She's like, yeah, my mom was doing research on our family and found out that we're Jewish. So she's like, so what do I need to know? Okay, so really I should have said, love your neighbor like yourself, and the rest is just commentary. But I wasn't thinking. So she asked all these questions. She asked, like, you know, I don't know, what goes on in the building? What's different programs and denominations? And it was like, I was trying to explain to her, it was getting overwhelming. And she's like, you know, maybe I'll go look it up on Wikipedia. I'm like, yeah, like, that's a good idea. But you should also come back here yourself and meet people and get a chance to see what it's like. She's like, you're right. I'm like, listen, you should come back for Shabbat. She's like, what's Shabbat? I'm like, okay, let's take a step back. The Sabbath every 7 days is, whatever, there's like free dinner. She's like, oh, sounds great. Like, she's like, is Shabbat happening this week? I'm like, yeah. Happens every week till the end of time. No, I didn't say that. So I'm like, great. So I told her time, place, great. And she ran off and I went back to my friends. So she came to Hillel that first Friday night for Shabbat dinner. It was kind of tough though. Like, the first week of the year, a lot of people come and it was sort of like a balagan, and she came with friends of hers who weren't religious, they didn't really want to be there, so she sort of got lost in the crowd. But I made sure to wave to her and we sort of reconnected, but it wasn't great. A few weeks later, I was making Shabbat dinner with some of my friends in my apartment. I'm like, you know what, I should invite that girl. So I sent her, I think I emailed her. She came. The second she walked into the door, she was so excited about everything. Or she walked in and we had a map of Israel like on the wall of our apartment. She's like, Israel, like I've heard about this place, like I want to go there. Like, do you know about Birthright? Like, free trip to Israel. She's like, whoa, sign me up. And we like showed her the I was giving a tour of the apartment, the kitchen. Here's the meat section and the milk sections. And she's like, oh, I read about that online. Like, I read about that on Wikipedia. I don't know if people actually do that. I'm like, yep, we actually do that. And the whole meal. It turns out she's also like really loves baking, and someone had made homemade challahs, and she loved that. And the whole meal, it was just like, it's almost like, you know, I think about it sort of when Harry Potter finds out that he's a wizard, and his whole world opens up to him. It's almost what it was like. And so then after, she emailed me after Shabbat, or maybe on Shabbat, but I got, whatever. She emailed me afterward saying, Hart, thank you so much, I had a great time. I'd love to get more involved in Judaism and the Jewish community. So one of the things I remember that happened during the meal that she had mentioned, I think when we were doing Kiddush or explaining Shalom Aleichem, she said she wished she knew how to read Hebrew. If you can follow along and know what's going on. So I'm like, I don't know, I know Hebrew. Or I'm not like a Hebrew teacher, but like, I don't know, I went to Jewish day school, spent a year in Israel, I know some Hebrew. So we started learning Hebrew together. Really from the basics. Aleph, Bet, Abba, Gimel, Dalet. Took a while, after a few weeks or a few months, she ended up going out and buying a Siddur. She started coming to davening every Friday night. She started coming to Mishmar every Thursday night. Now, like, no one goes, not no one, but not everyone goes to Mishmar. You all, I'm sure, do. And she was there Thursday night learning the Parsha with this girl every week. And she became part of the Jewish community. And when I think back to where that story started from, it was that one day she walked into Hillel. And at the end of the day, Hillel's just a building. And she walked in and almost walked out and might have never come back again. Because there was someone there to meet her and to talk to her and to write her back and all these things, that can really change the whole trajectory of someone's life. Okay, so let me take a step back and I want to talk a little bit about Penn's Jewish community a little bit. But we'll see how it's relevant to everyone else. So Penn has around 10,000 undergrads. Out of that, around 30% are Jewish, so around like 3,000 Jewish students, which sounds like a lot, I mean, it is. But I'll call you as you guys want to. I mean, Ryerson has like a few thousand, Rutgers has like 5,000 Jews, NYU has 6,000 Jews, Barnard's like, in Columbia has like 3,500 Jews, probably like, I don't know, like 40% Jewish. It's like a huge number. Stern's like a lot of Jews. 1,200 something. Bar Ilan, Hebrew U, also a lot of Jews. Penn also is a really great Jewish community. Orthodox community, Hillel, Chabad, JLIC. Do you guys know about JLIC?
Yeah.
It's the one who's around. Yeah, so there's a really great JLIC couple. Rabbi was great, and I got to Penn, and I really like got involved in all that, and I loved it. And it was like really great learning and chesed and singing, and it's like a really great community. Like the average Friday night, probably the Orthodox community gets like 250 people at the Minyan. And then the Shabbat dinner between Hillel and Chabad and Reform and the Conservatives, there's probably like 500 kids coming to Shabbat, which is amazing. It's like one of the biggest in the country. And then, like in the middle of my sophomore year, I started thinking about it. I'm like, wait, if there are 500 Jews here, but there's three, I'm like, where are the other 2,500 Jews? And how come they don't come to anything? So someone's actually done, people have actually done studies of this, taking polls of random unaffiliated college students all across North America, asking them, why aren't you more involved? What do you think the number one answer is? What was that?
They're busy.
Busy? Good. Enough time, yeah. What? No one asked them. They don't know how to get involved. Not interested. Good. What's your name?
Shiraz.
Shiraz. So the number one answer by far, they said they felt intimidated by the more religious students. Number two was they said that they didn't have any friends who were Jewishly involved. I think number three was they didn't have time. Four was they didn't believe in God. Five was they used to do Judaism and now they wanted to break. And six was Israel was a turnoff. Or something like that. So like, fine, there were some real issues, but for a lot of them, like, maybe they did want to be involved, but they just, I don't know, didn't know anyone. It's hard to walk into a room where everyone seems to, like, know each other, and, like, and you're not part of that, and you didn't grow up with that, and they don't know where to go or how to go. So, anyway, some of my friends and I, we sat down sophomore year, middle of the year. We didn't see this study, but we knew that there was something wasn't right. There are all these people, and so we said, you know, I wonder if there's something we can do about this. Us as students, freshmen, sophomores, to do something to share all of this in here with everyone out there. We're like, what if we do a Shabbat dinner? But instead of bringing them to Hillel or Chabad, which, I don't know, could be a little bit intimidating, it's sort of hard to know what's going to happen. What if we do Shabbat dinner in our dorms, in our apartment, and invite some of these random 2,500 Jews? We're like, okay, fine, but how are we going to find these random people? And one girl at this meeting, she actually said, like, oh, everyone in my hall is Jewish and never comes to anything. We're like, great, we'll start with that. So the first meal, I remember like it was yesterday, March of my sophomore year. It was 5 religious people and 10 assorted others. That girl brought the people from her hall who were like random people, and this guy who just found out he was Jewish, and these two girls who like grew up Reform, and one guy who actually used to be Orthodox and dropped, like really a whole mix of Jews. We had the Shabbat dinner in the quad, which is like the dorm where all the freshmen live. So Friday night after davening, I was like running over carrying trays of like vegetables and chicken. And as I'm like by the entrance way, I see this guy who I had met once or twice, and he's like, Hart, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, we're having Shabbat dinner. He's like, Shabbat dinner in the quad? I'm like, yeah, in like the third floor lounge. He's like, whoa, that's next door to where I live. He's like, can I come? I'm like, yeah, totally. So now it was 5 religious people and 11 assorted others. And we sat down and had Shabbat dinner. Not so different than Shabbat dinner you probably have every week. We did Shalom Aleichem and welcome people in, and we did Kiddush and explained it. And a lot of people there had gone to Sunday school or like Reform summer camp, so they knew some of the songs, and it was great. I mean, some didn't, and it was great. Great food, great conversation. People stayed for like maybe 2 hours. There were 4 people there who I'd never met before, stayed for around 5 hours. And they wanted to sit and talk and sing songs and learn Zmirot and talk about Judaism and the Jewish community and Philadelphia and social justice. And I remember thinking, like, who are these people? Where do they come from? I didn't actually ask them that. But one girl there told her story. She said she grew up in New York in a Jewish family, conservative reform something, and they used to do Shabbat pretty regularly. So when she came to college, she went to Hillel the first week. Hated it. Too many people, too religious, too weird, too unfriendly, someone stepped on her toe, the food wasn't good. Whatever it was, she got turned off, and she never came back. Until 8 months later, when she happened to live in the hall of that girl from the first meeting who invited her and who brought her here. And here she was. And she said she couldn't believe how beautiful Shabbat could be in college with other students. She's like, I want to do this next week. I want to do this every week. I want to bring all my friends. So we said, listen, we can't do this every week. But next week, come back to Hillel. Now you know the five of us. We'll show you around. We'll just shoot with the cool kids. We're cool too. But so she came back the next week. And we sat with her and introduced her to the cool kids. And she knew someone from home. And she came back the week after that. And okay, it's like a really long story. But she ended up going to Israel for a summer and then becoming religious, is now married to one of my good friends and teaching in an Orthodox day school. She's like pretty crazy. And I think about like, that's funny. At one time I overheard two of my friends talking about her. They're like, yeah, like randomly she just like started showing up one day. And it wasn't randomly. It was because someone thought to invite her and to sit with her and to talk to her and to tell her about things. No one forced her to do anything. She wanted it. She just needed someone to open those doors for her. So after that first Shabbat dinner, we're like, wow, this is great, we gotta do more of these. So the next year, my junior year, we ran around 10 of these meals. It wasn't just me, other kids in the Orthodox community, they said they wanna run Shabbat dinners for their friends, and their friends running for their, and it was just like, all these people were inviting their friends for Shabbat dinners. The next year, my senior year, we ran around 35 of these meals. But just to give you a sense, each meal is maybe 10, 15 people. Each person is like a whole world. You don't know the impact it could have. So I'll tell you the story of one girl from one of these meals. So junior year, I'd heard about this girl at Penn who was Jewish, went to Jewish high school, hated it. I don't know what happened. She hated Jews, she hated religious Jews, she hated everything. She refused to step foot into the Chabad or the Hillel. So I'm like, okay, we got to get her to come to one of our Shabbat meals. So it turns out that my roommate had been lab partners with her. But you'll see, like in college, you meet a lot of people. Your roommates, your lab partners' roommates, your roommates' lab partners. You just like and parties and groups and classes and just like you used to meet a lot of people. So it turns out we had a connection. So I sat down with my roommate and we wrote her a message on Facebook. I'm like, hey, what's going on? Some of my friends and I are having Shabbat dinner this week. Nothing too crazy, just some cool people, some good food. Do you want to come? And I remember we were like so nervous. What if she doesn't want to come? What if she says no? But we're like, look, like what's the worst that can happen? She's not coming anyway. So we like press send quick, close the computer. she writes back. She's like, sure, I'd love to come. I'm like, okay, good. So when we have these meals, we always try and invite a mix of people. Because I guess it's kind of hard if it's 10 Orthodox people and one person who has no idea what's going on. Because they're going to be like, why is everyone like all speaking this weird So that's it's hard. And it's also hard if it's just you and 10 people who have no idea what's going on. Because who's going to sit and talk to each of them and make sure that they're doing okay? So we try and do a mix. Maybe half and half of religious, non-religious, regulars, non-regulars. Or a third and two-thirds. So for that Shabbat dinner, we invited a bunch of other people. People who were like really not involved in the Jewish community or like maybe like on the margins of the community. We called the meal for 6:30. By 7 o'clock that Friday night, everyone was there except for that girl. We're like, shoot, she probably had second thoughts or she remembered that she hates Judaism. The other people who worked the first Shabbat in college, first Shabbat of their life, we got to start. So we started the meal. Shalom Lechem, welcome people in, Kiddush, Motzi, Icebreaker, started serving the food. 8 o'clock, there's a knock at the door. I go and answer it. Of course, it was that girl standing there. She's like, I'm so sorry, there's a trip and I got back late. I'm like, don't worry about it. Welcome, my name's Hart. She's like, oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm like, thanks so much for coming. She came in, we got her a seat, we got her a plate. I don't know if she ate anything the whole meal. Maybe she ate beforehand, or maybe she didn't trust our kosher. maybe she only eats not kosher. I don't know. But it was fun. Like, we had a really good time. I remember it being a really funny meal. Somehow we were like quoting different like rap artists, and my roommate was like quoting all of Ice Cube's lyrics. We were like on the floor laughing half the meal. But also we talked about Israel. Someone was taking a class in modern Middle East politics that came up. It was really great. So that girl had to leave a little bit early. Before she left, she came over. She's like, Hart, thank you so much. I had a great time. So afterwards, when everyone left and we were cleaning up, I turned to my roommates. I'm like, guys, good job, like for that girl and for all the people who came. Like we gave them like a positive, meaningful Jewish experience. You don't know what that could do for someone. After Shabbat, we got a Facebook message, which I'll quote to you. Dear Rodin 403, which is the room that we lived in, thank you so much for an incredible Friday evening. I don't know if you realize or if I can begin to express the extent to which dinner with you and your friends affected me. I was surprised by how familiar your Shabbat table felt. It was exactly what I needed to finally feel at home and anchored in a community for the first time at Penn. Maybe I'll even run into you at Hillel one of these days. I hope that it suffices to simply say thank you, and I hope you understand what I mean by that. So we got this, and we were like four guys, so we weren't crying, but it was like a very powerful moment for us. Like, this, Also, I don't know what it was. Like, she didn't eat our food. She didn't hear our Divrei Torah. The fact that someone just invited her and made her feel welcome and didn't judge her for what she was or wasn't and just made her feel comfortable and welcome to the Shabbat table can actually mean so much. And like, we realize that it's not even about the Shabbat dinner. I guess Shabbat dinner is sort of a good example of a way to create that space. But really it's about the people and relationships and creating other spaces. So for example, we realize like holidays are a great time where a lot of Jews have like, I don't know, come out of the woodworks. So I'll tell you about Pesach. So Pesach, what happens at Penn usually is all the religious kids go home. Orthodox, conservative, everyone. The school newspaper, they used to call it the second exodus, because everyone leaves campus. But not everyone leaves. There's still like probably 1,500 Jews left at campus who don't have a seder to go to at home, or I don't know, don't want to miss classes, or whatever it is. But a lot of them, maybe the one thing they do a year is they show up at something where their parents bribe them or grandparents guilted them. So seder night, what usually happens is 300-400 kids show up at Hillel looking for a seder. And there's not much there. Most of the Hillel staff goes home. So they have one big mass communal seder like in the dining hall. People sort of come in, do what they do, and they leave. Actually, after it fills up, they actually would turn people away at the door, and they gave them little seder kits to go, and they told people to go do it on their own. So I heard about this, and I went to my parents. I'm like, Mom, Dad, I love you. I love seders at home. But here's what's happening at Penn. I have to stay there to run seders. And my parents understood. They were going to miss me, but they would survive. So that year, my junior year, I decided to stay at Penn to run seders. And I convinced or bribed 14 other, so it was 12 other students from Penn, friends of mine decided to stay. Then we also got someone from Brandeis who was off, and someone from Stern also came to run Seders. Really, like, we needed every person. So the 15 of us, we decided we were going to run Seders. And it's actually a little bit tricky. For like running Shabbat dinners, it's pretty easy. You do like Shalom Lechem, Kiddush Motzi, and then hang out. A Seder, it's complicated. It's long, there's halacha, there's magi, and it's like all these things. And so we spent a lot of time thinking, and we brought in some rabbis, and we got these really cool haggadahs, and we really prepared and thought about how do we run a meaningful halachic seder for people who don't know what halacha or a seder is. But, I mean, it's something that hopefully 13 years of Jewish education is preparing us for. And we prepared a lot. So Seder night, we knew all these people were coming to Hillel, and we told friends of ours to go there. And then we did is we told people, we had someone at the front door telling everyone as they came in, either you can go to the big, parentheses, boring communal seder down here, or upstairs on the second and third floor are going to be smaller student-led seders. So the 15 of us broke up into five groups of 3 leaders each in a small room, and around 150 people came to our seders. But we broke it up into small seders, each of 20, 30 people. And it's really amazing the difference that it makes. The downstairs seder lasts around an hour. People sort of come in, they leave. All of our seders lasted between 4 and 5 hours. It was the same people. First time walking to Hillel, first seder of their life. I think there are two things that really made it powerful. One that the fact that it was run by their peers, by fellow students of theirs, who also like really like put a lot of time thinking about how to make this relevant and meaningful to them. The other thing is that also the size, the fact that it wasn't this big dining hall of 30 people, but it was 20 people around a table, and each person really like was like supposed to be there and like was really the center of attention, and we were able to really like focus on them. And so we did it again the next year. Actually, I'll show you. So the next year, I knew we wanted to do it even more, so we did a whole campaign to try and get students to stay at Penn to run seders. We made these t-shirts. It says, Pastor of Penn 2010, let my people stay. It's pretty good. So the next year, we got around 25 students stayed at Penn to run seders. We did the same thing, ran seders for like 350 people. It was like, it's pretty amazing. And like there were like people who like told me like their lives were changed because of the seder that they went to. Okay, so let me just fast forward a little bit. By the time I was graduating Penn, I realized we had reached around 1,500 Jewish students. Not me, like the whole community, a lot of people, each doing their own part. And I realized like, that was more than Hillel or Chabad was reaching for like $0. So I said, I wonder if these ideas work at other colleges. And so I had a brother at Maryland, I knew some people at Barnard, some people at Queens, and they're like, yeah, we also have a really great Jewish community. Chabad, Hillel, GIC, but there's like thousands of Jews who don't come to anything. And they're like, we should start running Shabbat dinners and stay on campus to run seders. So I decided I was going to put aside my degree in bioengineering when I graduated and work on this, work on trying to spread these ideas to other colleges around the country. And that's what I've been doing since I graduated, really working with students on campuses, doing stuff like this. And I also work with the OU on this. They sort of taken this project on. And I think the OU is invested in this from two standpoints. One is they see you, the people sitting in this room, you also, as the future, they see you as the future leaders of American Jewry and Canadian Jewry and British Jewry and Israeli Jewry. Really the future of Jewish people, and so sort of like investing in you as leaders and people who are shaping Jewish communities on your campuses and really shaping Jewish life around you. So that's one side, sort of like leadership and empowerment. The other thing is that I think this is actually like a model that's actually reaching a lot of people. So in the past 5 years, we've run around 750 Shabbat dinners for around 15,000 students who weren't really part of anything. Which, think about it, that's like, it's like a staggering number. And it's all through like one student reaching out to another student. 5 people, 10 people around a table. Like the largest event we did is 20 people. So it was a lot of people doing small events in really intimate settings to really connect with people. I spoke to Noah Weinberg, the founder of Eish HaTorah, before he passed away. He said that he believes modern Orthodox college students would save Klal Yisrael. It's pretty wild. So that's basically what I do, working with students on campuses to do stuff like this. In terms of what it is, like sort of where it is now. When I first started doing it, it was just me. I just like would go up to someone random or someone I met in my class or in Starbucks and invite them to Shabbat dinner. And sometimes they'd be like, "Oh, do you work for Chabad? Are you part of Hillel?" I'm like, "No, I'm Hart Levine. I'm a junior in bioengineering." He's like, "No way, I'm also in bioengineering." I'm like, "Cool, we should do a bioengineering Shabbat dinner." We never did it. Anyways, based on that, one of my friends started calling it the Hart Levine Project. Because it wasn't about some organization, denomination, institution. It was about people sharing of themselves with someone else in a very real way. So as a group, we didn't call it that. We called it Heart to Heart, which I guess is a little bit based on that original name. But it's really about how do we create meaningful relationships and meaningful conversations and create a more loving and welcoming Jewish community. And so there are students running Heart to Heart Shabbat dinners and Pesach Seders and Hanukkah caroling and Purim parties and also just like finding ways to connect with people, bringing them to Hillel and Chabad or the JSOCs or whatever. Really working to connect more people to Jewish life on campus. I want to talk about people going to Stern for a second. Because you're probably thinking, like, okay, great story, nothing to do with me. So people going to Stern. I'll talk to you for a few minutes. People going to Stern. There are a few things. So first of all, you might think it doesn't apply. Okay, so one thing, and this actually is relevant for everyone, is that Heart to Heart is not just for totally unaffiliated Jews who just found out they're Jewish. I mean, I think it's also for them. But it's also for Jews who are on the margins of the community. People who are, maybe didn't go to Israel, or didn't grow up with this, Bali, Chuba, people who are not so comfortable in the community. And I think Stern, maybe because at Stern everyone's Orthodox, a lot of people get lost in the crowd, fall through the cracks. People who didn't go to Israel went to a different school, didn't go to Jewish day school. Actually, I have a lot of friends who went to YU and Stern and became not religious. And there are actually some students at YU and Stern who started running Heart to Heart Shabbat dinners at Stern for students who weren't doing anything for Shabbat, which is pretty wild, but it actually happens a lot. So first of all, there's a lot to do even within Stern itself and to create a community and make sure people feel connected. That's one. Two, a second thing, is you can go to other colleges. Like, for example, like I was explaining, like for Pesach Seders, we had people from Stern and YU come to Penn to run Seders. And really each person makes like such a big difference, especially for the holidays where most people go home. Each person can really do a lot. And we've had students going to different colleges locally, even just like around New York, there's so many colleges, NYU, Columbia, to sort of help out and help run things. And you have friends there. A third thing, okay, so we started thinking about this and we realized that like this model of sort of Heart to Heart and students running Shabbat dinners works great if you have unaffiliated Jews, but that's everywhere, and if you have religious students. It doesn't have to be 300 or 500. It could be 10 or 20 or 50. If it's one, maybe it's tough. But as long as you have a community, you can do something. But then they said, what about colleges where they don't have a community? There's no religious students. What if we can do something there to sort of like help build Jewish life in those colleges? So we called up the University of Kentucky. I don't know, they have a good basketball team. It's a cool school. So we called up we looked it up. Supposedly the school has 20,000 students. Out of that, around 200 are Jewish. So not so many. They don't have a Chabad, they don't have a Hillel. They have some like Jewish professor who's like organizes the Jewish stuff. So we called her up. We're like, "Hey, we're students from Penn. What if we came to Kentucky and did some Jewish stuff there?" And she's like, "That's amazing. We have nothing going on here. We'll like fly you out here. I'm just warning you, only like one student's going to show up because we don't really have like anything." We're like, "Okay, great. Look, like I mean, like one person is the whole world, but we're not going to go all the way to Kentucky just for, oh, I don't know." But so we decided we were going to try and find more Jews, and we like posted on Facebook and. It was actually pretty amazing. We found a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. I don't know, like from a really far connection who was at the University of Kentucky and Jewish and looking to like learn more about Judaism. So we contacted her. We made this funny YouTube video and sent it around and whatever. So instead of flying, 7 of us decided to road trip down to Kentucky. We drove down. We brought all the food with us because there's no kosher food in Lexington. And we made Shabbat. And 15 students and professors showed up for I think the first Shabbat ever at the University of Kentucky. And we did Kabbalah Shabbat, and we were like singing Am Yisrael Chai as the sun setting. It was like, it was really powerful. And then we had Shabbat dinner, and there was like bourbon, because Kentucky bourbon. It was like a really powerful Shabbat. It's actually pretty amazing. Two girls who were from Kentucky who like randomly ended up there are actually now religious or kind of religious. Like a few years later. That was a kind of a pretty wild coincidence. But we realized that if each person is like a whole world, each college is a whole like, I don't know, galaxy, universe, and there's so much to do in each college. So we started doing more of these Shabbaton, sending people to Shabbat to somewhere where there's either very little going on or nothing going on, to sort of help bring some chizuk and connect more people and run Shabbat. So we've run around 30 or 40 of these colleges, Shabbatons to colleges all across. I mean, mostly in the Northeast, because that's where the colleges are. I'll show you this map I have, which I carry around with me or look at it sometimes if I don't know, just for fun. It's a map of every college in America. There are around 4,000 of them. And you'll see most of them are in the Northeast corridor. Can you see it? Alright, there's a lot of colleges. Thank you. So the point is, if you ever get bored of Jewish life...
But that is
empty. Do some of that way and then this way.
Okay, first of all, it's interesting how like most of the colleges are in the Northeast corridor. I'll take it, thank you. And so basically we started, I would tell people that if you get bored of Jewish life in your college or you've reached every unaffiliated Jew or there are no unaffiliated Jews, I have 3,999 colleges to send you to. And there's a lot, there's really so much to do and there's always more to do, so don't feel like you have nothing to contribute. You also can get involved a lot, I mean, I don't know how many of you are planning to be like NCSY advisors. That's high school students, but when high school students graduate, they become college students. So one of the things we've done, we've had people who are NCSY advisors will then organize Shabbatons to the colleges where their NCSY alumni are. So it's really like there's so many ways to sort of help grow this. Doing things in other colleges, it's like a little bit trickier because it's not your community and you're not going to see these people the next day around campus and invite them back and have coffee with them and bring them to Chabad the next day. But there are things you can do. Sometimes we bring them back to YU and Stern for a Shabbaton there. Or someone, like, there was this girl at random college, this girl at Stern started learning like on the phone with her, B'chavruta. Now she's also religious. There's really so much to do. I want to talk a little bit about sort of like what it takes and sort of like what goes into this. Before I get there, people going to England. So England, it's like the same thing. Actually, there was a study of British Jewry a few years ago, and it found that most Jews aren't involved in Jewish life in college, and a lot of them say the reason why is because they're intimidated by the large religious communities and the JSOCs. Really, you can take all my stories and substitute JSOC for Hillel, and then it's really the same exact thing. So there are a bunch of students in British universities who contacted me, and they're like, Hart, why is there no Hart in England? I'm like, I don't know, why is there no Hart in England? And they're like, we should start running Shabbat. So they started running Shabbat dinners in different colleges and Shabbatons to small colleges out in far out, which didn't have a Jewish community. And it's like now a whole branch, and there's 10 different universities part of this umbrella. It's pretty wild. There's people in South Africa who've been doing running Hart Shabbat dinners and South America. It's like, it's really, like, these things can work anywhere. I mean, I think Shabbat is like, sort of like, it can work anywhere. Like, I don't, everyone loves Shabbat dinners. But also, each college is a little bit different, and each college you go to, each college you're going to be a part of, each city you're in, it's a little bit different. So that's why it's up to you to find out what those nuances and what the challenges are and where the gaps are and what you need to do. So in terms of what it takes to do that, the first thing is just to be aware. Really just to be aware that there are people around you, hundreds, thousands of people around you who are Jewish and just didn't grow up with so much Jewish education. And that a lot of them are looking for something, maybe not to become Orthodox, but for connection, for spirituality, for community, for meaning, for direction. And to realize also that you have so much to offer. Just the fact that you're sitting here in this room, like, I think that puts you in the top like 1%, or the top 0.1% of American Jews, in terms of like what's been invested in you and sort of what you've experienced and what you've learned. So like you have so much to offer to the world. So that's first thing, being aware. The second thing is probably like finding these random people. Like, how do you find random Jews who aren't coming to Hillel or Chabad? So yeah, it's like a little bit tough. We've worked on this and we've put together some strategies. We have a whole like guideline of how to find random Jews without being creepy, without being too creepy, whatever. And like there are ways to do it. And I think it starts by being aware and instead of opening your eyes and finding people. The next thing is it takes a certain amount of confidence to go over to someone new, to talk to someone who's different than you, doesn't look like you, doesn't act like you, it's not part of your community, and to go over and talk to them, to meet them, to have Shabbat them. Yeah, it's like a little bit scary. Listen, like I'm the worst person to be doing this. I'm bad at talking to people, I'm shy, I'm introverted, I stutter. I remember the first time that I did something like this, it was sophomore year, I was sitting in the kosher dining hall in the Hillel. And I realized a lot of my stories happen in the kosher dining hall, in the Chabad. Because you'll see, once you're part of a Jewish community, and all of you are going to be part of the Jewish community, wherever you are, it's very easy to tell who the outsiders are. People who walk in and they're not really sure if they belong there, or if this is their place, or if they sort of stand on the side and the margins. So I'm sitting there having lunch with my friends, sophomore year, and I see this guy sitting by a table by himself. I'd never seen him before. He thinks he's reading a newspaper. No one comes to Hillel to read a newspaper by themselves. So I'm like, you know what, I should go over and say something. And I'm like, I don't know, this is weird, I don't know what to say, someone else will do it, it's fine. So I went back to talking with my friends. I look back 10 minutes later, and the guy's still sitting there by himself. So I'm like, shoot, I gotta do this. So I like force myself, I'm like sweating to death, I like stumble over, I'm like, hey, can I come? He's like, yeah, come sit. He's like, hey, I'm John. I'm like, cool, I'm Hart, nice to meet you. And I sat, and we became friends. He was a great guy, and we started talking, and he'd come back to Hillel a few times more after that. And I always invited him to come sit with me and my friends. I invited him to that first Shabbat dinner in the quad. He loved it. And after that, he started coming to Shabbat all the time. It turns out he was in like one of the best a cappella groups on Penn campus. So he loves singing. So he loves Zmirot. His favorite Zemer is Kari Bone. And he like got really involved. It turns out his grandfather maybe like used to be religious, and his dream was like for his grandkids to know how to bench. So I like taught him how to bench. It was really amazing. He like really got really involved. Probably 2 years after I first met him, he sat me down one time after Shabbat dinner. And he said, Hart, I just want to tell you something. He said, I didn't grow up religious, I didn't grow up with any of this, nothing. And so when I came to college, I thought I couldn't be involved in it, because I wasn't a part of that. So all first semester, I never came. And then I realized that since I didn't go first semester, I'd missed my chance of meeting anyone. And I realized I'd lost my chance at ever being involved in Judaism for the rest of my life. And I just gave up. And then he's like, you know what? And then he thought, you know what? I'll just give it one last shot. And I went to Hillel one day for lunch, and I sat at a table by myself. And you came over and sat with me. And he said, you don't know what that meant to me. And every time I'd come back to Hillel, he'd always invite me to come sit with you. He said, and that Shabbat dinner in the quad, like, that was the best Shabbat of my life. He said, all that's inspiring me to come back more and to learn more and to share more with others. So I remember thinking a few things. First of all, it's so easy. To talk to someone new, it takes 5 seconds, 5 minutes, 5 days of your life. And as hard as it is for you, it's so much harder for them. And I think in some sense, like, we have an obligation to be the ones doing that. Second thing that is so important, those small things, talking to someone new, a Shabbat dinner, talking to someone who's sitting by themselves, those small things can actually like really mean the world to someone. And the last thing is actually, it's so much fun. Those Shabbat dinners I ran, and Pesach Seders until 3 in the morning, and running a Purim Suda for all these like frat guys on campus, like those were things that like made it exciting and like really, really dynamic and really like really got me excited about like being Jewish and like sharing that with others. Okay, on a side note, this is not the only thing that I did in college. I majored in bioengineering. I also went to Gemara Shir twice a week, prepared 2 hours a day. Gave a shir in Rav Kook once a week, ran the Eruv, started a Jewish acapella group, ran the Israel activism group. And in my spare time, I also wasted time and hung out with friends and just like did nothing and slept a little bit. And in my spare time, I like ran a lot of Shabbat dinners and helped connect a lot of people to the Jewish community. But it's something that you can do as part of your lives. Like all of you are going to be having Shabbat dinners anyway. Every week for the rest of your life, probably. So it's a question of who you're inviting to those Shabbat dinners. All of you are going to be part of Jewish communities. The question is who you're including in those communities. And it's not something you should do for the rest of your life full time. I mean, if you want to, like, we could talk about it, and it's great. But I think it's something you can do as part of your life, and something that you can do as part of your life wherever you are. You can find ways to do it. Actually, on that, maybe I'll talk about Washington Heights for a second. Let's see, so I live in Washington Heights now. After I graduated Penn, I moved there. So I'll ask the room. I don't know if people are familiar with Washington Heights a little bit. Yeah. Okay, what percent of Jews in the Heights do you think are Orthodox?
80.
80? 40. 60, 40. 40. Ooh. So, that's actually pretty low for what people usually guess. People usually guess between 80 and 95%. Someone won't guess 100%. The answer is actually 21% Orthodox, 10% conservative, 20% Reform, and 49% secular, unaffiliated, just Jewish in Washington Heights. Pretty wild. So what's fascinating is not those numbers, because that's probably the same numbers for all of them. I mean, that's It's even higher Orthodox than the rest of America. I mean, in American Jewry, the largest and fastest growing denomination is no denomination, just unaffiliated. But what's fascinating is that like nobody knows about this in the Heights. Even like the rabbis and presidents of the shul, they all guess 80-90%. I didn't know this. And then there was a study that was done, and so now what I've started to do is like I live in the Heights, my wife, and we started meeting people in Starbucks and on the subway and on the street corner, and our neighbors and our friends' neighbors and our neighbors' friends, and inviting them to Shabbat dinners and Pesach seders, and I think these are ideas that can sort of take with you wherever you are in life. I think college is sort of a special time to do it for two reasons. One, you're like in close quarters with a lot of people who you might not otherwise know or ever be in contact with. And also, I think college is sort of time in life when people are looking for direction, looking for, you know, how they want to spend their lives, how they want to live their lives, and so what community they want to be involved in. But I think these ideas can work anywhere. And so if you're going to a college which didn't really match up with what I was saying, I think there's still so much to do, and there's still ways to do these things on your campus, in your communities, in your cities. Okay, so I'm going to end with the Dvar Torah, and then we can maybe talk questions or practical things. Okay, so in Parshat Shoftim, it talks about the story of the Egla Arufa, which is if you find a dead body out in a field, you don't know who killed it. So the Torah says that there's a kinyan of the nearest city, they have to go and they have to be mechaper for it, they have to wash their hands and just kill this cow, and they have to say that we didn't do it. So the Mishnah in Sota talks about this, and it says, listen, it's really sad this guy was killed, I'm sorry, but why are we blaming the Zakenim, the elders? They didn't do it, but they're not murderers. And it says, here's what probably happened. This random guy came to this local town, no one welcomed him in, no one sat with him, no one escorted him, no one gave him food. So Rashi there says, no one made him feel like part of the community. And because of that, he left, and somewhere along the way he was killed. So we turn back to the community. And I think it's dafka the religious community, the people who care about Judaism and Am Yisrael and Torah Yisrael, and we say, you know what, it is your responsibility to look out for the people who are coming and don't feel comfortable and don't come back, or find the people who aren't coming at all and find ways to help connect them, and really do whatever they can. And so the Torah says, we make the Zakenim swear, Yadeinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u. They have to swear that we opened our arms, we opened our eyes, we opened our hearts to these people. And it's a really interesting Korean ketiv on the pasuk, where it's spelled one way but it's spelled another. So we read it, Yadeinu lo shafchu, the plural. But in some sense, it's the Jewish community's responsibility. The Orthodox community, Hillel's responsibility, Chabad responsibility, heart-to-heart responsibility. But if you look, it's actually spelled in the singular, shafcha. And I think each person has to think for themselves, what's one way I can make a difference? What's one thing I can do for one person, one Shabbat dinner, one Shabbaton, in one person's life? And I think everyone has that ability and maybe even has that responsibility to do that. So, yeah, that's really the end. I mean, these are a few of my stories. I have dozens more, and there are hundreds more happening in colleges all across the country, and America, and Canada, and England, and South Africa, and Israel. And really students like you finding ways to make things happen and change people's lives, and probably change your own lives the most. And there are thousands more stories waiting to happen. And it's going to be up to you when you go back to your campuses, and your colleges, and your communities, to figure out what do they need, and how can you help make the Jewish people more connected and help more people be really part of the Jewish people. So if you want to be involved in this, which could mean a lot of things, if you want to run Shabbat dinners, if you want to go to campuses to run Pesach seders, if you want to go on Shabbaton, if you want to just talk about or figure out like what your campus needs, or how to be, or like how to help connect more people, or how to find random Jews, you can sign up. I'll pass around a sign-up sheet, and we'll be in touch. And then I'll pass around. Here, I have two. And I'll pass around some brochures and take questions. Thank you. Any questions? Yeah.
It's a personal question. You don't have to answer.
Okay.
But was the OU funding this in anywhere? Was this just, you know, like paying for Shabbat's dinner?
Right. When I first started doing it, it was just, we just did it, and then we reached all these people, and then like when I was graduating, I spoke to someone at the OU, and they're like, Hart, this is amazing what you're doing, we'd love to help support you, because we really believe in what you're doing, and in empowering people to reach out, and in reaching out to unaffiliated Jews, and so now they give us a lot of the funding to do this. And in turn, you know, we give funding to students to run Shabbat dinner. If you run a Shabbat dinner and invite random people, we'll like reimburse you for the whole cost of the meal. Or if you need funding to do whatever, go somewhere for a Shabbaton, run a Pesach Seder, really like whatever you need. Or if it's not funding, if you want to just like, you need training, you need to figure out how to do this, you want to be connected to other people, really like that's what we do, try and I mean, like, I don't do anything now. I sit at home and help people, and sit at a desk and help people like you do stuff on your campuses. I guess I do stuff in the Heights. In the Heights, that's my like personal sibuk nefesh, reaching out to like random unaffiliated Jews on the street. But really, I work with students like you to do this, and that's sort of all through the OU. I work alongside JLIC also on campuses. Like, they're also, I mean, like, they also believe in this mission, sort of like, how do we reach all Jews, not just the Orthodox ones, not just the ones who are coming already. Yeah.
What's the best way to be effective for not living on campus?
So what was your name?
Sorry.
Not living on campus. Great. So it's a good question. I think there's probably two challenges not living on campus. One is you're not meeting people in the dorms. You'll still meet people in classes and in the dining hall, in the coffee shops, and whatever. The other challenge is sort of like, where do you do things? So there actually are people who've been running Hartshart Shabbat dinners, bringing people to their families' homes and having Shabbat dinners there, as long as your parents are probably cool with it. or like sometimes like students, like when their parents are out of town, they like run a whole Shabbat dinner there. So you could do that. That's one thing. The other thing is you can also, I didn't say this, like Hartshart's not just about Shabbat dinners. You also couldn't, if you meet someone who mentions that they're Jewish, you're like, no way, you can go for coffee and talk about their Jewish life with them. Or someone just came back from Birthright, or someone is interested in talking about something with you, you can just sit in the cafeteria. You could bring them to, if there's a Hillel or a JSOC or something on campus that you can sort of connect them to locally. There's a lot you can do there. It doesn't have to be a Shabbat dinner in your dorm. That's like, I think, one model that works, but there's ways to do things. There are people who feel comfortable and reach out to people to bring them to their homes, or doing things sort of locally also works. Maybe like during lunch hour, doing like a lunch and learn, or I don't know what the equivalent is, but something like that. Yeah. Oh, I didn't pass that before. Yeah. Sorry, yes.
Have you kept in touch with any of the people who you've affected?
Yeah, it's a good question. Probably not as much as I should. And so don't learn from me. But, I mean, it's hard. Like a lot of people. Here, I'll pass these brochures while I answer that. So I would try. First of all, like, the way I would try and do it was, I knew, like, meaning, like, the point wasn't for me to be their sole contact. I would try and bring them to Hillel, to Chabad, introduce them to the rabbis. That way they could sort of, like, meet other people and be part of a community and make a lot of friends and join some Kiruv class if they wanted to. So I would try, not to, like, I would pass them off and not talk to them again, but, like, sort of make sure they were supported beyond just me. But beyond that, like, some people, like, I did stay in touch with. Often, the other thing is that, like, there are some people who came to the Shabbat dinners, they came once, and then, like, they never came back. And that's what, like, not everyone, like, I didn't tell everyone's story, but I told the story to people who, like, hey, you know, a lot of people came and didn't come back, and that's okay. So basically, it's sort of like self-selecting, the ones who wanted to come back, so those people I'd follow up with. And, like, there are some people who then, like, moved to New York City after they graduated, so now they come to, like, Shabbat dinners in my apartment, and they came to, like, somebody came to the Pesach dinner when I ran theaters on campus, graduated, now lives with his non-Jewish girlfriend in the city, and they've been coming to our Pesach theaters and Rosh Hashanah programs and Shabbat dinners, and are now, like, joining our community. So there are ways to do it in small ways. And there are some people who came to one Shabbat dinner and then I sort of never heard from them again, which again is okay. And then, like, sometimes, you know, like, you never know how these things will affect them. Maybe 10 years later when they're deciding how they want to live their lives, who they're going to marry, or how they're going to raise their kids, they're going to say, you know what, I remember that experience, I remember that friendship I had, and I want to make that part of my life. So it's actually pretty crazy. Last night, so someone came to one of the Shabbat dinners that I ran in Penn. Mom was Jewish, his dad wasn't. He grew up totally not connected to Judaism. Ended up at a Shabbat dinner. I didn't really hear from him again, but we were friends on Facebook. Like, that was a good way to sort of, like, very casually stay in touch with people. And I saw on Facebook, like a few weeks ago, that he said he's coming to Israel to, like, work in the mayor's office. So I'm like, wow. So I, like, messaged him. I'm like, no way, I'm going to Israel. So actually last night we, like, went out for drinks, and I caught up with him and we talked about Jewish life, and he wants to come to Shabbat dinner in New York. He lives in the city. So there are ways to do it, and you should do it, and you shouldn't just have to one for Shabbat dinner and consider your work done. I mean, it's not your, like, it's not just on you, but I think it is important to think about sort of like investing in people long term. And so maybe the answer is don't try and reach every single Jew on your campus. Maybe try and focus on 10 or 20 or 30. And the way to reach everyone is to get more people to think about how they can also reach 10, 20, or 30. But it's a good question. Yeah. What's your name?
Alishaba. How do you maintain your values while
trying to be normal and show that Judaism is a normal thing?
Yeah, right. That's like $1 million question. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think doing all the stuff I did, I don't think I had to like sacrifice my values at all. I think part of it is that sort of the spaces that we met in, it was pretty much always me hosting something Jewish. So like when they came to my apartment and we ran Shabbat dinners, and there were 5 religious kids there, so it sort of had that sort of like demeanor of a Shabbat dinner. And people like sort of figured out how to not, like, if they wanted to use their cell phone to go outside. So in some sense, the fact that I was usually the one hosting it, so that allowed me to be. And I guess in general, in college, you're going to be interacting with people who are different than you. And I think being, like, instead of always being like defensive, if you can sort of like be proactive about it and trying to sort of share things with them, then I think it helps keep your values stronger and really makes you think more. I think it also makes you like think about it better. For example, like Shabbat, like, I don't know, sometimes you just go through Shabbat, go through the motions, do Kiddush, because like, well, I always do Kiddush. And then when someone comes to Shabbat dinner and says like, well, why do you make Kiddush? Like, it's a good question. Like, why do we make Kiddush every week? So I think in some ways it actually helps like strengthen your values and sort of strengthen the things that you believe in or the things that you care about. It is tough. The other thing is like I lived with religious Jews and I ran the tishes and like I was going to minyan every day and like so like I also spent a lot of time like within the Jewish community and probably I was able to do so much because I had a strong community that I was based in. And then I'd like sort of branch out a little bit, but I always had this like a strong support system to rely on. So that's also probably like another way to sort of help, like make sure that you're not just like always floating out and doing things, like make sure you sort of have like a home base a little bit. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Mona Stern next year, but I'm originally from Montreal, and I was wondering, do you have anything in Montreal?
Yeah, we do some stuff with McGill. There's some students there who are like, all right, there's like 3,000 Jews who don't, they start going to run Shabbat dinner, work with the Ghetto Shul and the Hillel, and yeah, but I mean, like there's a lot more to do. There's always more to do, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, so we send, like, where? It's like Canadian dollars instead of American dollars. But, like, and like, some things are in French, but it's okay. But otherwise, like, Shabbat dinners and Jews and, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever...
What's your name?
Sarah. Have you ever had people whose dad was Jewish but mom wasn't?
Yeah. Tricky. They say actually, like, a lot of, I don't know the exact numbers, but, like, a high percentage of American Jews in college have... I think they say that 60% of American college students who are Jewish only have one Jewish parent. So assume half mom, half dad, that means 25% of people say they're Jewish are actually not Jewish. Basically, the way we do it is for Shabbat dinners, it's sort of like we invite anyone. Sometimes people will bring their non-Jewish partners, and you can't say you can come, but your boyfriend can't come. It's just like, and it's fine, come to Shabbat dinner, that's okay. But in terms of afterwards following up with them, which you should be doing, maybe like I'd email everyone, but I only like follow up a lot and sort of push the people who I know are halakhically Jewish. Everyone else, I'm not gonna chase after them. If they wanna follow up with me, then I guess. So actually, there was one student who came to Shabbat dinner, like random person I met in Hillel, whatever, like one of these really random stories. Turns out his dad was Jewish, his mom had converted Reform, so that's also tricky. But he like really wanted to get involved, and we started learning Hebrew together. And he like was really, it's a really long story. He ended up converting Orthodox, and now runs a Kartar Shabbat dinners for like other people. It's like pretty wild. But like if, once you get into conversion, that's like above your pay grade also. So like the rabbi was working, it gets a little bit complicated. But I wouldn't let that stop you from inviting people. Maybe I'd stop that from like following up with them and going all the way. But for a Shabbat dinner, like. Okay, worst comes to worst, someone who's not halakhically Jewish, I don't know, what if they're going to, it's a little bit tricky, in the short of it, but I think there are ways to sort of like manage it, so it doesn't have to like, interfere too much. Yeah. What's your name?
Ilana. Do you feel like you have trouble, like, are you ever in situations where you have trouble connecting to people who, like, you have certain interests and, like,
yeah, I mean, a
like
lot of times. Yeah, but that's okay because I wasn't doing it alone. I was doing it as part of the community, part of my peers. So like, if someone was like really cool, like I knew that's just not my strong suit. So I was like, oh, you should meet Josh. He's like also really cool and religious, and you guys would totally hit it. I wouldn't say that, but you should meet Josh. You would totally hit it off. And then like, or like, I knew he was coming. I'd invite Josh to be at that Shabbat dinner also. Or I bring him to Hillel. I'm like, oh, you guys should sit with. Or like, wow, you're really into philosophy. Like. You should talk to my friend Danny. He's like a philosopher and also really smart and Jewish and like really into Jewish philosophy. You guys would like love to talk for like hours and hours, which I have no interest in doing. realizing like what you're good at, and also like sort of knowing like who your allies are, who people around you are. Yeah.
Do you by any chance know what like Stern's policy is on bringing other people in for the challenge?
I don't know. Did not go there. My wife went there. My wife went there, so I could ask her. There are probably a lot of Jews in like Midtown Manhattan who are. I don't know. I actually grew up around there. Actually, Midtown Manhattan, like around where Stern is, actually like one of the hottest neighborhoods for like young post college Jews who are not religious. Interesting. I don't know. Yeah, something to think about. Like Murray Hill is like the fat, like really like most of my friends from Penn who like came to, like I kind of knew, came to sort of Shabbat dinners, all of them moved to Murray Hill, which is like in the 30s. Yeah, but I don't know, but I'm sure there's ways to do it. Yeah.
Before you mentioned like if someone wants to convert or whatever, like you bring somebody else, are there rabbis involved in your organization?
Yeah, I mean, so when I was on campus, I was doing everything sort of with the JLIC rabbi. I mean, like, I went to him and he said, like, I'm not, like, this is not my specialy, I don't do outreach, but I love what you're doing. And, like, all the questions I had, I would bring to him and we would talk about things together. And I think it's important to sort of have those figures who can, A, like, sort of answer halakhic questions, but also sort of be, like, sort of like a grounding force in the work that we do. And so it works differently on colleges. It depends, like, if there's a JLIC couple, like, there's some colleges we work with where like there are no, it's like a bunch of students, but there's no JLIC couple. So sometimes they turn to the Chabad rabbi, sometimes they turn to me, and I'll ask questions or I'll answer the questions for them. Yeah, but definitely we try and do it like as much with as much support as possible. And definitely when it comes to like really complicated things like conversions and yeah, fun stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
What are some of the funniest questions?
Like when people came to Shabbat dinners and asked things.
Like, what's up with the two challahs, or like, what's up with all the food?
Yeah, like people ask about like all the things that we sort of take for granted, like, I don't know, what's the funny
like,
question?
Like, what were like the top ones where you kind of had to like think for a second and be like, huh, like.
And oftentimes it's just about like, why do you do this? Like why do you wash your hands before a meal? Like, why do you, salt is a big one. Like, why do you use salt? Right, it's like it's kind of like random. That was about Shabbat. People also asked questions. A lot of people were curious about like sort of like men's roles versus women's roles in Judaism and sort of how that played out. A lot of people asked questions about like evolution, maybe because I was like studying bioengineering. A lot of like biology people. A lot of people talk about like science and evolution and how does it make sense. So like you explain it and like you know there's a lot of books and resources available about that. But like most people didn't come in with like these really complicated kashas about like philosophy and theology of Judaism. Most of them were just like they just didn't know so much and they just wanted to know like what this was all about. Or they wanted to just like have a really nice experience and feel welcome. And a lot of people didn't ask questions. They were just like happy to go along with it. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's the way it is. Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's a good question. For the most part, my thinking was like, people are really involved in the conservative community, which is like five kids, I don't know. Where are you going?
Barnhart.
Right, okay, so Barnhart's a little bit different because of GTS, but still my thinking is that like, at least they're already coming to Shabbat every week and doing things. Okay, maybe there's a girl making Kiddush instead of a guy, but like, it's not like the end of the world. So really I would try and focus on the students who are not involved in anything. It also made a lot of things easier, because if I'm like having conservative people, then like, and if we're doing davening, what about mechitza, or even like Shabbat, it's just like there's some like complicated things. People who are unaffiliated, they don't like have positions about, they just like, they have no positions. Because someone is here, it also sometimes we'd actually work with the conservative students together, because like the conservative students who are religious, they knew tons of conservative students who were basically unaffiliated. So we'd run a Shabbat dinner together, and like we'd host it with them, and like they'd bring all their friends. So it actually was a good way, to sort of promote unity within the Jewish community, within like the people who are involved. And even like most of the things we do, it's not like, Orthodox versus, not their verses, Orthodox and everyone else, it was really like the kids who cared about Judaism trying to reach out to the kids who didn't care about Judaism. So often I think it sort of like pushed us to be on the same team a little bit, which I think was great. Actually like this girl at Penn who's like the head of the conservative community. She actually got involved in the beginning, like we invited her to a heart-to-heart meal, whatever. Vice President of Hillel. And it's now like kind of Orthodox and like ran a lot of heart-to-heart stuff and not that it made her Orthodox, but I think like I think these things, like the more people are involved in sharing and teaching and doing all the things, I think it also helps them grow closer to Judaism. Yeah. What's your name?
Michelle. How did you approach like questions about Israel?
Yeah, it's tricky. Where are you going to college?
Sensei.
So Israel's tricky. So it's funny because at Penn I also ran the Israel activism group, and it was hard. So I tried to separate the two a little bit because Israel, like a lot of people, like really intense, like angry feelings, and Hashanah is about loving people and Shabbat and we're all friends. But I'll tell you, and so I'll try and keep politics out of it. Actually, I'll tell you one story. So when I was in Penn, there was one story, was like an anti-Israel rally. So I went to the rally to sort of like protest against the protest. We were gonna like ask all these questions afterwards, and I went with some friends, and after the event, it was like bashing Israel. Afterwards, there was a Q&A. And before we can ask questions, they called on someone else in the audience, and he got up and he said, "I'm Jewish. My parents support Israel, and I'm ashamed to be associated with them. And I'm ashamed." And he goes on for like 10 minutes ranting about like war crimes in Israel. And so the people sitting with me, they're like, "Okay, we got to go teach this guy a lesson." I'm like, "No, we got to invite him for a Shabbat dinner." So afterwards, we tried to go over and talk to him, but it was tough because all the Palestinians crowded around him. They loved it, but I tried to get his attention. It didn't really work. So we left. A few weeks later, late one night, I had to go to the supermarket to get something, and it's like 12 o'clock, and I'm standing in line checking out, and behind me in line is that guy. And he sees me, and he's like, "Hey, aren't you the guy from the..." I'm like, "Yeah, the Israel-Palestine thing." So he both checked out, we stood outside. He's like, "So, why do you support Israel?" And look, like, I know I'm not about to get into like a political argument at 12:30 in the morning on a street corner with this guy who like clearly knew his stuff and was majoring in like political science. So I started explaining to him like what Israel meant to me. In terms of the Jewish homeland and the people and the culture and the ingathering of exiles and the revival of a language and like the whole world and nation and culture, and he says, "You know, I thought that Judaism was just believing in God, and I don't believe in God, and like my grandmother's cooking, I don't like that either." So he said, "Judaism had nothing to say to me. I didn't realize Judaism has all of this: a people, a past, a culture." Like, so we were talking about like Jewish culture and Jewish nationality and Jewish history for like half an hour on the street. And then we also agreed to sort of disagree about politics for 15 minutes, and that was okay. And we moved on. I went back to my room, and like I turned to my roommate, the guy who was, I'm like, "You're not going to believe who I just spoke to." But I wasn't going to like, I wasn't sure what to do next. But then he messaged me like a few weeks later saying, I think it was the night before Seder's, like the first year we were running Seder's on campus. And he messaged me, he's like, "Hart, do you know somewhere where I can get like a good Passover Seder?" So I'm like, "Yeah, you should come to us, we're running Seder, it's gonna be amazing." And I don't know what happened, I don't know if he didn't come or I just got caught up with the other 150 people and we missed him, but maybe he didn't come. Maybe he chickened out. It happened, people back out last minute. But I sort of forgot about it, whatever. The next year, senior year, we were tabling on campus. So this is actually like a trick. It's a good trick we used to do to find random Jews. A lot of colleges have a tabling session. There's like a student activities fair where like all the different student groups set up a table and say, "Join the Penn Democrats, join the Penn floor hockey team, join the Penn ballerina, whatever." And so we got a table and we set it up, and we set it up like a Shabbat table with a white tablecloth and two candlesticks and challahs, and we had little shot glasses of grape juice. And we just stood there, and people would come by, and it's funny, people would walk by, and you could tell the people who were Jewish because they'd like take a second glance and they'd walk over and they're like, "What is this?" We're like, "Oh, it's a Shabbat table." They're like, "No, I know, but like, what's your group?" We're like, "Oh, just a bunch of students inviting other students to Shabbat dinners." They're like, "Whoa, sign me up." And we got like a few hundred kids signed up for that. So that guy, the anti-Israel guy, passed by the table. He's like, "Ian," I'm like, "Oh, you're doing it." I'm like, "Oh," and we talked a little bit, then I'm like, "Oh, do you want to come for a Shabbat dinner?" He's like, "Yeah, I'd love to come." Well, great, so he signed up. That week I emailed him. Didn't respond. Okay, I wasn't sure. I think a month later I emailed him again, also no response. So I'm like, okay, I guess it's not, whatever, it's fine. And then like a month later I saw him around campus. I was going to my class in modern Hebrew poetry. He spoke about Hebrew poetry for a while, and it was good. So that week I invited him again for Shabbat dinner. No response. And so it's also this question of like, how much should you push people, and like at what point is it stalking? I don't know, but he kept being interested. And so then the next, I sort of dropped it. The next semester, my senior second semester, I invited him one more time. And he writes back, he's like, "Sure, I'd love to come." I'm like, okay. "Also, can I bring my girlfriend?" I'm like, "Great, whatever." He shows up. He had like the best time at the Shabbat dinner. Like everyone was like really into it. It turns out he was like, she was going to study abroad in China, and someone else who was religious had just studied abroad in China, and they spoke in Chinese. And I was talking to his girlfriend, who it turns out she didn't know it, and he didn't know it, was Jewish. So a really crazy story. It was like a really great dinner. But then he went abroad that semester, and then I graduated at the end of that year. And then I sort of lost touch with him. A year later, a friend of mine from Penn called me up, and he's like, "Hart, I met your friend Ian." I'm like, "Ian?" I'm like, "Ian?" I'm like, "Wow, where did you meet him?" She said, "I was sitting on the hill one day today for lunch, and I saw this guy sitting by himself at a table." I'm like, "Okay, I should really go over and talk to this guy. I know what Hart would say." So she goes over and talks to him, and he's like, "Hey, how are you doing?" They sit, and she's like, "Oh, look, do you ever come to Jewish things or to Hillel?" And she's like, "No, I've never been here, but I've been to like one or two Jewish things, and it's been really great." And she's like, "Well, did you come back?" And he's like, "No, like I don't really know anyone." She's like, "You don't know anyone? Do you know like so-and-so? She's like, "Do you know Hart Levine?" He's like, "Hart Levine? Hart's one of my best friends." And that was like the sweetest thing anyone has ever said about me in life. So he probably still hates Israel, but like now he like likes Judaism and Shabbat, and like I think it's important to sort of try and separate. And oftentimes it's Jews who are sort of in the anti-Israel camp, and I'm not trying to convince them otherwise. Cause sometimes like having political arguments is like gets you really riled up, but it doesn't actually get anywhere. So I try and sort of stay away from that, but try and reach out to people on a personal level. I also do a lot of Israel activism stuff. But, I mean, I did in college, but now I really just focus on the Jewish activism stuff. Yeah. Any other questions, ideas? Great. So if you signed up, I'll email you, and you can email me. My info's on the card. And really, like in the next year or in the next couple of years, when you're doing stuff or you want to do stuff or you're not sure what to do, be in touch, and I'll be in touch with you. And together, I think we can really do great things for the Jewish people. Thank you.